Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the iSports MSU Red Seat Report. I am Tyler Hayward. Red Seat Report is part of iSportsWeb.com. And you can like the Red Seat Report on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Red Seat Report to locate our past shows. Yesterday, former Super Bowl champion for the Pittsburgh Steelers and Spartan offensive lineman Ulish Booker came on the show. He broke down the struggles of MSU's offensive line and actually talked about being a part of the team the last time the Spartans upset the Buckeyes in Columbus in 1998. But joining us today is Patrick McEwen, who covers the Buckeyes for us at iSportsWeb. Patrick, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great. You ready for tomorrow?
I'm pretty excited. I can't wait to be there.
It's gonna be... You're going?
Yeah, I get to go to the game tomorrow.
Yeah. Covering it for the website or going as a fan?
I'm going as a fan. I have tickets.
Yeah, you can't cover a game like this for the website. I mean, with all due respect to iSportsWeb, a game of this magnitude, you know, you got to be at your best. But let's dive right in. You're here to help us out, break down the Buckeyes. A lot of Michigan State fans don't get an opportunity to see Ohio State since they coming into this season, Ohio State, Michigan State, they were supposed to have some of the best offensive lines in the country. Like I said, we talked with Ulish Booker about Michigan State's struggles yesterday. Well, MSU has kind of struggled with injuries now that everyone's back. They've still had issues. Ohio State's offensive line, they're not exactly living up to expectations, though, either. What have you seen where you can say, hey, look, this is the reason why they're not up there as one of the top offensive lines in the country right now?
I mean, the biggest thing I'm seeing that's sticking out as a problem is when we go to run to our downhill running game with Ezekiel Elliott, opposing teams are doing what Virginia Tech did last year against us with Daddy Nicholas up front, and they're doing numerous different stunts and heavy blitzing. If you watch any Ohio State's games this year, there's usually seven or eight guys blitzing at any given time because with our passing inefficiency on the season, it's been ridiculous to watch. So you can stack seven, eight guys in the box and blitz, and regardless of how good the offensive line is doing, our guys are really getting exposed out there trying to stop twice as many guys as we have dropping back. So biggest people who have done it against us this year, you saw Maryland do it. They got inside Cardale Jones's head. They got in there on JP Barrett when we were in the red zone. You saw Illinois do it last week with a lot of stunts. They got to JT Barrett numerous times. I mean, and these aren't that good of defensive lines. The best defensive line we've seen this season was either Penn State or Maryland's, and both of them we didn't do that well against. So that's why this game going up against Shalik Calhoun on that Spartan defensive line, it's definitely going to be something to watch.
Yeah, that's actually one of the problems that a lot of people around the Michigan State program have had with the absence of Pat Narduzzi. You don't see those types of blitzes as much as you used to. You still see them from time to time, but you don't see them as much as you used to. And when you do, it's usually to the left side as opposed to, which is, you know, where offensive lines tend to put their pass protectors. As opposed to the right side where you tend to put the running guys, the guys you want to run behind. And so it is going to be interesting to see if Michigan State tries to emulate what they've seen. Maryland is second in the conference in sacks per game. You can sit there and look at how bad Maryland is. You can't put their pass rushing, you know, on the level of the rest of the team. They are one of the tops in the conference at getting after the quarterback. And so we'll see if Michigan State can try to emulate that a little bit. The receivers in Columbus, they've lost a lot throughout the season, whether it be injuries, suspensions early on. What is the state of the wide receivers down there? Because everyone is focused on Ezekiel Elliott. Everyone's focused on JT Barrett. What's the state of the wide receivers in Ohio State?
the wide receivers, we have so many dynamic playmakers on offense that it's really hard to spread the ball out as much as we should. I mean, Michael Thomas, Jalen Marshall, Braxton Miller, Curtis Samuel, these are all guys that if they touch the football, you're getting 10, 15 yards out of them. But the problem that we've had with our receivers, the problem we've had with our team so far this year, is the fact that there's nobody under center that's been able to distribute the ball effectively if you don't count the Rutgers game. The Rutgers game was the only time this season that we had three separate guys that are starting a wide receiver haul in touchdown passes from JT Barrett. This was, I mean, this is the only time that we've been spreading the ball out offensively for touchdowns. I mean, Cardale Jones had 8, and Michael Thomas has 8 alone. I think Jalen Marshall is at 3 or 4 right now. And offensively, especially passing the ball, we're 84th in the country. In comparison to last year, we were in the top 10. So biggest problem was the quarterback swapping between Cardale Jones and JT Barrett is just causing a rift between the receivers and the running backs. And the most reliable option right now is just feed Zeke and hope for the best.
All right, we'll talk about the situation under center in a minute. But I want to stick on the wide receiver issue. Braxton Miller, he went from under center to being split out wide. How has he adapted to that role? Has he lived up to the expectation? Obviously, there's probably going to be a couple of, roads in his way that he'll have to mow down. How has he adjusted to moving to wide receiver?
I mean, the biggest thing that all Ohio State fans remember that Braxton Miller, when you think of his big plays when he was at quarterback, no one remembers his 60-yard bombs for a touchdown. Everyone remembers him juking out 6 guys, diving over the pylon for a score. So for him, the transition is less of having the ball in his hands and more of trying to get to it. So his transition, I feel like, has been pretty successful. But the only time he really had a breakout game was Virginia Tech, and that was the season opener. Other than that, since then, he's had less than 100 yards total receiving, and I don't even think he's had more than 3 touchdowns. So to watch him kind of decline as the season goes, I look to see him this week being a guy that they focus getting the ball to, because they're, as of right now, he's not out there for many receiver sets. They're only putting him in at that H-back position, trying to run him the ball, get him in open space. His transition has been moderately successful, but I'd like to see them get him more involved in the passing game. I mean, he had that highlight reel against Virginia Tech with the spin move. He also had a couple weeks ago against Rutgers that diving back catch that kind of went viral for a little bit there. But, I mean, he's doing the best he can. It's a big transition, definitely, to go from having the ball every single play, having the ability to score every single play, to kind of having to learn to block, kind of having to learn to set up other guys to let them score. So for him, I think he's doing pretty well with it, considering he was a 2-time All Big Ten Offensive Player of the Year, to go to a guy who has less than 500 yards receiving on the season and only a handful of touchdowns.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, it's great of an athlete as Braxton Miller is. It's not fair to give him 1 year to go pro. And, I mean, obviously, he was the best option at quarterback before he got hurt last season. But to give him just 1 year to acclimate himself to wide receiver, which is where he's probably going to end up in the NFL, it's tough on the kid. It really has to be. You said that they'd like to get him the ball in open space. They try to use him as an H-back a little bit. Have they used him extensively in gadget plays, the jet sweeps, the end-arounds, any throwbacks? Have they used him at all in those types of situations? And if they haven't, should Michigan State expect to see that tomorrow?
They've used him a lot in jet sweeps, bring him around the edge, just having him direct snap and try and run with the ball. But what they haven't done yet is let him pass. I think a little trick that Urban Meyer's keeping up his sleeve is some kind of double pass, a jet option run where they let him throw. They did it last year against Alabama, and Evan Spencer went up and caught the touchdown pass to give them the lead right before the half, and I think it's definitely something that Michigan State should look out for, because Urban Meyer is the kind of guy to keep something like that just on the side for when they need to spark offensively to try and get them a score. Because Braxton Miller can still throw. When an interview done just a couple weeks ago, he was talking about he could throw very effectively up to 40 yards. It's just beyond that that his shoulder gets a little bit strained. So I could see him throwing a quick 30-yard dump-off pass to Jalen Marshall crossing across the field on a 3rd-and-13. It's definitely something that is in the playbook, I guarantee you.
All right, let's look at JT Barrett here. Obviously, you talked about the quarterback controversy at Ohio State with Cardale Jones and then with JT Barrett, under JT Barrett. Because to me, it seems like they're a lot more efficient now that he is there. And frankly, at the beginning of the year, I thought that was who Ohio State had to go with to have a successful year. Not to say I wasn't buying the Cardale Jones stock, but I just didn't think he could. I didn't think he was as efficient as Barrett was.
The biggest difference that you can see when you watch any film of Cardale Jones and JT Barrett is the ability that JT Barrett has to pull the ball on the read option. He's got the quickness to try and get to the edge. Last year, he rushed for almost 1,000 yards using exclusively the read option. And that's something that Cardale Jones, being the fact that he's 6'5", 250, he doesn't have that quickness. I mean, he has the ability to read the play. I mean, he broke a couple different rushing touchdowns this year, but he doesn't have the quickness that JT Barrett has to force a defense to keep an extra guy in the box to account for him on those running plays. And another thing is Cardale Jones is more of a pro-style quarterback. He's got the big arm to throw deep. He's not that short 5-yard in guy that's trying to dump it off to Jalen Marshall. That's more of JT's style. So I think the biggest problem you saw at the beginning of the year was a pro-style quarterback trying to play in a spread option system. And it really wasn't working effectively as well as it could have been. And you saw against Rutgers, JT Barrett had 5 total touchdowns. He had 2 rushing and 3 passing, 3 to 3 separate receivers. The offense just runs more smoothly, more crisp when he's in there to make that defensive back account for his presence in the pocket and his ability to run.
Earlier on in the year, Ohio State, they struggled in the red zone. For the reasons you just mentioned, his ability to run, is that where Barrett kind of won the job over as far as his running ability helps Ohio State capitalize when they get inside the 20?
I mean, it was very significant. If you watch the Maryland game, Cardale Jones could move them into the 20, but the second he got there, the only ball Cardale can really throw effectively is the deep ball. So when the field's shortened like that, they have to rely exclusively on Ezekiel Elliott. So you saw JT Barrett come in for the red zone package that Meyer implemented earlier this season. He had 3 rushing touchdowns just as the red zone quarterback. So it's definitely 2 things that gave him that nod for the starting job. And one is his ability as a dynamic runner. The second is he has much more sound decision-making. He spent an entire year in that system. He knows the ins and outs of it, and he has experience playing the same teams that he played last year. So I think his decision-making and his dynamic as a runner is really what gave him the nod on that one.
Yeah, let's switch over to the other side of the ball here. Look, Ohio State won last year. Even then, they did have issues slowing down Connor Cook. Do you expect them to make any adjustments? If so, what do you see happening?
They kind of came out with the release earlier this week. Connor Cook, it's obvious the guy's not going to be completely healthy. He's nursing that shoulder injury, and what Maryland was doing last week was the second he had the ball, they were bringing pressure. They were hitting the guy. They were trying to keep him down. They were forcing him to make quicker throws, and he's more of a guy that wants to look downfield. He's a very poised quarterback in the pocket, and when you collapse it on him and you start hitting him, he's going to be less effective. I look for Ohio State to run almost a 4-6 bare. They're going to blitz corners. They're going to run zero coverage. They're going to bring as many people as they can, and with a defensive line that consists of Joey Bosa and Adolphus Washington, these kind of guys are going to be getting there themselves. But when you have blitzers coming off the edge like Darren Lee, like Joshua Perry, it's definitely they're going to bring heat, and I think that's the biggest thing they need to focus on to try and keep Connor Cook out of a rhythm. Last year, he threw for 58 yards and two touchdowns for a QBR of a 69.9. He was extremely effective distributing the ball. He had three wide receivers with five receptions, all almost accounting for 70 yards each. The touchdowns were spread out. The offensive focus was to march the ball down the field with the passing game, run Jeremy Langford up the middle. But the biggest difference between last year and this year now that Connor Cook won't have on his side is last year he had a 1,000-yard rusher in Jeremy Langford. This year, the leading rusher for Michigan State has just over 500 yards in LJ. So they don't have that two-part offense that they used to have anymore. And like you pointed out at the beginning of the show, it's because the offensive line has been struggling so much. So I think a lot is going to be on Connor Cook's back this game and his ability to get the ball downfield. But, I mean, a quarterback of his caliber, there's really not much Ohio State's going to be able to do to shut him down. It's more of containing his explosion. He's still going to throw for probably close to 300 yards and a pair of touchdowns, regardless of how many guys we blitz or interceptions we have.
Yeah, and you brought up the fact that it's not exactly a two-pronged attack with Michigan State. Over the last couple games, the Spartans have struggled to average 4 yards a carry. And that was part of what, and though L.J. Scott and Madre London flashed potential, they're both freshmen. Madre London is a redshirt freshman, obviously. Scott is a true freshman. And they've struggled ultimately down the road. They'll be fine. I think L.J. Scott is a future NFL player. But that was part of what Ulish Booker attributed to the struggles of the offensive line. It's just the fact that the running back hasn't been as productive. You look at it, last year Connor Cook only got sacked 11 times. That was tied for fourth in the country. This year he's been sacked 13. He still has to go against Ohio State's defensive line and Penn State's defensive line. Those are probably going to be the two toughest fronts, or two of the top three. We'll throw Michigan in there as well. Two of the top three toughest fronts that's an issue when you can focus more on trying to collapse the pocket and not have to worry about a running back breaking out, even though Gerald Holmes has come on kind of late as the starter. I actually just mentioned Michigan, and Michigan Week is next week for Ohio State. And Michigan, under Jim Harbaugh, they're succeeding at a level that not a lot of people saw coming this early on anyways. I know some Ohio State fans up here, and I told you this story before we got started with the show, is I walked into a room with a Buckeye earlier this week, and they said to a Michigan fan that they were talking to, it's a divided household, they said to a Michigan fan that they were talking to that they were really excited for that game in 2 weeks. Is there a chance that in the back of the Ohio State players' mind that they may be looking past this to the game? Or they may be overlooking the Spartans?
I wouldn't say that at all, mostly because that 2013 Big Ten championship was a big blow to the Urban Meyer era. He had a 26-game winning streak, the longest in Ohio State's history of college football, and to have that blown at a title game that was so big, they went on to lose to Clemson in the next game. I think that still stands out in their memory. I don't think they're going to forget. I don't think they're overlooking the Spartan team, because if they do lose this game, it doesn't matter. Michigan State will be in the Big Ten title game. This right here is a preview for a shot for the Big Ten title game. So the Buckeyes really need to come out here, and I don't think they're going to overlook the Spartans. But they have before, they have in the past, and the Spartans always play tough regardless of how efficient they are on offense. So I don't think so. I wouldn't say they're overlooking them.
Is this I gotta choose my words carefully here. Is this the de facto Big Ten championship in your mind? Because ultimately, if you're looking at it from an Ohio State perspective, if you beat Michigan State, that's all well and good. You have to turn around, and then it would be the winner of the Michigan-Ohio State game going to represent the Big Ten East against Iowa. Is this the de facto Big Ten championship, or are you as a Buckeye fan taking it one game at a time?
Me personally, I know I'm looking at it as a one game at a time thing, because right now the biggest problem with the playoff committee is they're saying Ohio State doesn't have a good resume. Well, if they beat Michigan State this weekend, and then next week they beat Michigan, and then they beat Iowa, that's three top 10 teams, and I could very well see them moving up to the number one overall ranking if they go 3-0 through that. And these are all three extremely capable teams of knocking us off. I mean, Michigan's defensive front has been phenomenal under Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh has that team playing angry, just like he did when he was at Stanford, and the way they shut down Oregon. Jim Harbaugh has the method to shut down spread options. You saw it when he was at Stanford. You saw it even before Andrew Luck got there. I mean, he mm-hmm. coached that team up. They shut down the spread offense. So I think the biggest threat to them would be Michigan, but you just have to look at it one game at a time, beat Michigan State, then play Michigan, then play Iowa.
Hey, look, you're a Buckeye, so I'm just going to tell you, if you're worried about how Harbaugh can slow down the spread offense, just go back and look at that Indiana game. I know it's a different style of spread, but they struggled there. Let's talk about go ahead.
I was just going to say, I feel bad for Indiana. That's a good football team. They took Michigan State to the wire. They took Ohio State to the wire. They also took Iowa down to the wire. They've played everybody hard this year. They've played extremely hard, including Michigan. And they're 0-5 in conference play, and there's nothing they can do about it because they're just playing the toughest teams in the conference. They're taking everybody to the wire, so I hope they get their first victory this weekend against Maryland. I just wanted to give the Hoosiers that satisfaction. They really have been a good football team. Jordan Howard, coming up from UAB, has been phenomenal. He tore apart Michigan front.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to go as far to say Indiana's a good football team. They're a good offense. The defense still
defensively
needs a little
speaking,
bit.
They just play hard.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the individual matchups. What are you looking forward to as far as, any matchup, position groups or individuals or things of that nature? What are you looking forward to this weekend?
My personal favorite is to watch Ezekiel Elliott go against that defensive front. I mean, Michigan State, regardless of how ineffective people are saying they're not doing, how ineffective they've been this year, their rushing defense is still top 20 in the nation. They're at 19th overall, holding an average yard to carry of, I think it's 3.6 and just over 100 yards per game. They've been still dominant up front, regardless of how little credit they get for it. So that'll be fun to see, and I want to see Zeke kind of thrive in that atmosphere because, for me, he's still a dark horse for Heisman. I feel like all Buckeye fans feel that way.
Yeah, and, I mean, a lot of what gets the Heisman voters' attention is to have a big game against a big-name team. And the Michigan State's defense has taken a hit because of their secondary, which, if Maryland is any indication or if it was just the fact they played a lousy offense, it seemed like they were coming along at least against the Terps. Now that, minus Vyonte Copeland and R.J. Williamson, this is as healthy as the team can get. Individually, for me, I'm looking at, there's a couple different matchups and it all involves up front. Adolphus Washington versus Jack Allen. Shalit Calhoun versus Taylor Decker. And Jack Conklin versus Joey Bosa. I mean, up front is where this game is going to be decided, I think.
That was the next one I was going to say, the Jack Conklin,
yeah,
Joey
Bosa.
Yeah,
when you look at
definitely.
That, you have six All-American candidates right there.
Yeah, that's, I mean, NFL draft prospects are just drooling watching that. It gives them a really up-close personal view of how these guys are going to transfer to the NFL, because they're versing players who will be in the NFL. These are, like you said, six possible All-American football players in the country all lining up within a foot of each other. So it's definitely going to be a dynamic thing to watch.
And then you have Malik McDowell, who might be available after a true true junior year next year as well. So that should be NFL scouts are drooling over. 17 NFL scouts are expected, or 17 teams are expected to be represented at the Horseshoe this weekend. What does that say about, like, not just how big this game is, because everyone knows it's a big game. It's essentially, the playoff starts now for both of these teams.
I mean, there's I was actually covering this a couple weeks ago when the Penn State-Ohio State game came around, because you had a lot of NFL scouts coming in to watch that game to see Joey Bosa on that national stage as well. But this one is definitely getting a lot of attention just because of, as Ohio State calls them, the slobs. This is a game that's designed for them. I don't think many people are coming to see if Braxton Miller is able to break out a big performance, or if Connor Cook can step it up against the secondary. This game is getting attention because of the guys in the trench that are going to be fighting. But, you know, as a Cleveland Brown fan myself, I don't get too excited about the NFL scouts, because I know the Browns won't draft a single one of them anyways.
Well, you know, I'm a Detroit Lions fan, so it doesn't get any better up here either.
You guys won't be picking up any of them either. They'll go straight to the Patriots.
Right. Let's get your prediction here. Well, final score, what do you have happening?
First half, I expect Connor Cook to come out guns blazing. Injury or not, the guy's an NFL prospect for a reason. I'm expecting Ohio State to come out slow. They always do. This year it's been the tail of the second half. I'm expecting skipping offense. I see Mark D'Antoni coaching up that defense, getting some disruption. I see Michigan State up maybe 21-24 to 14 or 10 at the half. So I'll say 21-10 at the half. But I see Ezekiel Elliott coming out in the second half. That offense will wear down the Michigan State front. I see him coming out bigger in the second half, that play action getting set up with the JT Barrett lead option. My final score, I'm going to go 42-31 Buckeyes.
Are you kidding me? We did not discuss it. I have the same final score.
Really?
I have the same final score. You go to the iSports website, I put that yesterday as my final score. I think it's a different situation. I think Michigan State kind of fires back. I don't think they stop Ezekiel Elliott, because that's impossible to do, but I think they slow him down enough, and Connor Cook, and so while Ohio State's trying to run the ball and milk it, Connor Cook, he can get it going a little bit. But I said this, Connor Cook can, we talked about how he's a little banged up. He can't be at 109%. He has to be at 110% for Michigan State to beat OSU this weekend, in my opinion. I got the same final score, 42-31. I got Ohio State winning this one.
Yeah, that's
all right.
We got
about a minute left. Patrick, thanks for coming on, man.
No problem. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Be sure to check out the show this Monday. Ryan McCumber is going to be back to help me wrap up the game this weekend. For Patrick McEwen, I'm Tyler Hayward, and this was the iSports Tennessee Red Cedar Report.